Matzah that we learned about in kindergarten, and then we have matzah that we learned about today. And we discover that they're very, very different things. If I had to ask you very, very simply, part of this will overlap with what we talked about before, but you'll see it goes in a very different direction. If I had to ask you, bottom line, what exactly are we commemorating with the matzah meal? Leila Seder, what would you say?
The stuff they ate as they were leaving the time.
Oh, who says that? Before you.
We're gonna run.
The kindergarten teacher.
No.
The Torah.
Kindergarten teacher, and before the kindergarten teacher, Rabban Gamliel. Gamliel says, pass it around, everyone, take one. Gamliel says as follows. Kol shalo omer, shoshak varim, elu pesach, lo yatsa yidei chovato. You have not said these three things at the Seder. We're now in the second source of the page. You have not fulfilled your obligation. And what are these three things? Pesach, matzah, maror. Pesach, matzah, maror. And then he goes on to explain. Now, we are used to reading the Haggadah. We are not used to thinking about it. We're going to think about it a little bit today. Pesach, matzah, and maror, lemon, please. Eliyahu Navi. Pesach, matzah, and maror. Matzah, ashuma. He explains each of these things. Why do we eat the matzah on Pesach? Hashem. Shelo he speak b'tzei kam shavatenu lachmitz ad shenigve aleim melech malchei amlachim hakadosh baruch hu v'galam miyad. We didn't have time to allow our dough to rise before Hashem, melech malchei amlachim, revealed himself to Am Yisrael and immediately redeemed them. That's Rav Gamliel. What's his backup? Where does he get this idea from? How does he know?
Well, we were in a hurry.
How do we know? So can say it. Shneamar. The yofu et avatzeka shehotzi mitzrayim ugot matzot ki lo chametz ki gorshu mitzrayim v'lo yachlu v'imamea. The gam zedah lo asu lahem. They baked the dough that they took with them out of Mitzrayim into ugot matzot. Why? Because they were gorshu mitzrayim. What does it mean gorshu mitzrayim? What does that mean? They were divorced. They were divorced. Fascinating. This image of gorshu means they didn't want to leave. They weren't ready to leave. We'll talk about what that means in a second. They weren't ready to leave. Why did they leave then?
Because that's a galon.
The Egyptians kicked them in their rear ends. Right? Whereas when the Torah says, "Ki b'chipazon yatzatem Mitzrayim," you left in a haste. Right? Who's chipazon? So Chazal say, chipazon Mitzrayim. The Egyptians were going out of their minds. They wanted the Jews out. Why? Why?
They were afraid.
Yeah, they were done. They were like, no more, right? We are ready for the Jews to leave. So Paro comes in the middle of the night, begs Moshe to take the Jews out. The Jews, for some reason, we'll have to understand why this could possibly be, aren't ready to leave yet. Okay? They make dough. Before they have a chance to let it rise, they're kicked out. Okay? Sound familiar, right? Okay. We're about to find out that Rangaliel is incorrect. Is this being recorded? Oh, no.
He's incorrect.
Okay. Or, I said that just to wake you up.
Heresy!
Or, that this is not the full picture. It's not the full picture at all. Who can point out a serious problem with saying that the reason why we eat matzah on Pesach is because of the dough that we baked after we left?
Because they ate it in Mitzrayim.
Who says? Prove it to me.
Pesukim.
Bring me the Pesukim.
Pasuk says in Parak Yud Bet. Pasuk, not Yud Bet, yes.
They ate matzah with the Karban Pesach.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct?
Oh, yeah, here we go.
So we look at Pasuk Chet. Right, we drop down to Pasuk Chet. V'achlu de basar b'layla hazeh tzli esh u'matzot al morim yochlu. Which night is Layla hazeh?
15th.
The 14th the night, right? Was the 14th when they shechted? The 14th, the night after the 14th,
right.
Which is before or after they leave Mitzrayim?
Before.
So, lo and behold, the next morning they're trying to bake bread, but they end up eating matzah anyway. But that's not why we eat matzah. We eat matzah because God commanded us to eat matzah the night before.
True, right.
So far, are we clear? Okay? Is this a problem? It's a problem.
Wait, why?
Hey, there are two commemorations.
I'm not sure what
God, okay, so now let's take a step back.
Yeah.
Take a step back. Right. Go to Pasuk Bet. God speaks to Moshe in Eretz Mitzrayim, and he says the following, and I want you to pay attention to two things. Number one is, when is God speaking to Moshe? and what time period is God speaking about? Okay? So God says, Pasuk Bet, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, which time period is God's, when is God speaking to him?
Adar, the end of Adar.
Yeah, or even maybe that the first moments of Rosh Chodesh Nisan, 100%. And what day is he talking about? Rosh Chodesh Nisan, that day. He's talking about that moment. This moment right now, as the sun rises on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, this is Rosh Chodeshim. Good. Then he tells Moshe what's going to happen in 10 days from then. What's going to happen in 10 days from then? The 10th of Nisan. The next pasuk. Good one. Be'asor l'chodesh hazeh, v'ichul lahem ish beit avot sel habayit. That everyone's going to take a sheep on the 10th of Nisan. Okay? So, what time period is God speaking about? Just spell it out. Before Makkah B'chorah. Just spell it out. 10 days from now. Right?
Ten days.
The near future. Okay? Then you skip ahead. Pasuk Vav. V'ayah lachem b'mishmeret. You'll guard this sheep ad arba'a asar yom l'chodesh hazeh. Until the 14th day of?
Of Nisan.
Of which Nisan? Of this Nisan. Okay, he's talking on Rosh Chodesh Nisan about what's going to happen 10 days from now and 14 days from now. Good? Okay? And when he says, it talks about the 14th, so then, on in Pasuk Chet, V'achlu et ha-basar ba-layla ha-zeh. Which night is that? That's the night of the 15th. And what are you going to do? You're going to eat Korban Pesach, and what else? Matzah and Maror. Korban Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. Those three things together. Beautiful. So, what other mitzvah about Pesach is commanded in Parshas Bo?
Maror?
Yes, we have Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. What other very important what?
The
Korban? So we also mentioned Pesach already, Korban Pesach. That's actually elsewhere.
What?
If you have to characterize Pesach, we eat matzah and we don't
eat
chametz. Is there a prohibition of chametz here?
No.
Really? Turn to the back of the page.
Pasuk Tedvav.
Shivat yemi matzot tochelu ach b'mavishon tashbitu se'or mibatechem. You should remove all leavening from your house. Kichol ochel chametz v'nichbata nefesh ha'im Yisrael. Anyway, its chametz will be cut off. So we have a prohibition of chametz. Now, let's take that information and process it. Prohibition of chametz. And yet, the next morning, right after the first Seder, as the Jews are leaving, what are they trying to do?
Bake bread!
How the heck can they make bread? It's a prohibition of chametz.
With the stuff they already have,
You can't bake bread. You follow? It was the only reason why they didn't end up baking bread was because God caused the Egyptians to interrupt them. The Jews had their way, right? They were trying to allow the dough to rise.
Wait, but Rav Asher, earlier on in the parsha when I think Paro says that he's going to kick the Jews, that the Jews are going to go in a strong hand, Rashi says that he's going to kick them out forcefully.
Yeah.
So that means
the Egyptians
did. It was almost prophesized that they were going to kick us out.
Yeah.
And that we were going to sin.
Correct. Well, what about sin?
Like, almost.
Oh, okay, so let's find out. Was this a close call or not? Were they doing the wrong thing by trying to bake bread? Okay. So look closely at Pasuk Yod Dalet. I kind of cheated.
It seemed that Pesach
Okay. We're going to see that there are two different Pesach. There's Pesach Mitzrayim,
and Pesach Dorot.
There's Pesach Lidorot. Okay? Name one detail of Pesach Mitzrayim that we do not do anymore, and if we did, your mother would kill you.
Yes.
We don't spread blood on the doorpost of our house. Try doing that at home, see what happens. See if you come back alive, right?
Okay? Doesn't remember
that. That's the Doros, right? That's really the Doros.
Isn't the Mitzvah in remembrance of that?
Not necessarily, no. It's certainly connected, but it's not a direct parallel. What else? Also, when they ate the Korban Pesach that first night, what should they be wearing? Korban costume?
What
they wear? I actually do that. It's a Sephardi custom. It's very strange.
What are they supposed to wear?
Slave clothes.
They're supposed to wear their hiking boots. They have to have their hiking staff in their hand and their backpack on their back. It's a pasuk. Pasuk says you have to you have to be chogeri. You have to put on your traveling belt, makelchem yedchem, your staffs in your hands, right? They have to be ready to leave as they were eating the korban pesach. We don't do that anymore. Okay, there are a lot of differences between the first night, that first pesach in Mitzrayim, we do from then on. Okay.
Well, you're never going to have an exact copy. I mean, I think the whole point is that we're supposed to do things that will make us remember it.
Correct. And what? So just one major detail is different, is that the prohibition of chametz doesn't appear in the pesukim that describe that first Pesach. What I just did was I cheated, because I skipped one pasuk. Look at pasuk Yudalet. V'haya hayom hazeh lachem lezikaron. This day that I'm talking to you about right now will be a commemoration. Now God has stopped talking about what's going to happen in 14 days from now. What's he talking about now? L'dorotecha. Forever. Right? 2013 in Ramat Beit Shemesh or in Tinek, wherever you're going to be. Okay? Chukat olam techagul. Now what's fascinating about calling this a zikaron? What does zikaron literally mean? Unbelievable. This is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. He's talking about an event that hasn't yet happened. And God is saying that this night will be a commemoration of something that hasn't happened yet. And it gets even more intense. Skip ahead to Pasuk Yud Zayin. Ushmartem et ha-matzot. You shall guard the matzot. That's what we just talked about, right? Shmur matzah. Why? Ki be'etzem hayom hazeh, on this very day. Which very day?
Rosh Chodesh Nisan.
The 15th of Nisan. Hotseiti et sivotecha me'eretz Yitzrayim. Which tense is Hotseiti? Future or past?
I took.
Past.
This is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. How can he say, I took?
Because he's timeless.
So 1986, the Astros were going to win the World Series, right? But, to my everlasting chagrin, they lost to the Mets in the sixth game of the championships. But, if you were a t-shirt merchandiser in Houston in 1986, what would you have printed a few weeks before? You would have printed the World Series t-shirts already. You would have printed the World Series champions.
That's a lot of money.
Right? Why?
Because you get a lot of money.
Okay? What's happening, Hashem, is planning the commemoration of an event that hasn't yet happened. Fascinating. Right? We know that Hashem is beyond time. Right? So, He's already viewing as a past tense event an event that hasn't yet happened. On some level, one second, on some level, we tap into this at our Seder. How do we do that?
Hashem will be Yerushalayim.
Okay, that's interesting, thinking about the future. But we also have a time warp. What's our time warp at the Seder? Right? When you sit at the Seder, we are not, and this is crucial, you can miss the whole point of the Seder if you don't realize this. We are not talking about history. The chol dor v'dor chayav adam lirot et atzmo kiluhu yatza min Yitzrayim. Right now, ata. The Rambam throws in by the word. He throws in the word ata. Now.
Also.
Yeah, so that's different, but the word ata, right, that a person should view when he's sitting in the Seder, we are leaving Yitzrayim right now. And we'll talk about this more, those of you who might share, we'll talk about this more over the next couple of days, but everything about the Seder is designed to trigger our imaginations so that at least for a few moments at the Seder, we're feeling like we're leaving Yitzrayim right now. Okay? One little detail of this, right, those of you who had a good time on Purim, so we have another exciting event coming up. 4 cups of wine. Not supposed to get smashed, but we know that wine loosens up the imagination. We're supposed to be able to feel and experience the ourselves as ki'ilu living Mitzrayim, right? In as intense a way as possible. Okay. So we also, the same way that Hashem views an event that hasn't yet happened as if it's already happened. So we're supposed to view an event that already happened as if it's happening right now.
Wait, so by God informing us to Moshe, is God taking Moshe out of
the confines of time as well? For a moment, yeah. Ibn Ezra actually says in this pasuk, he says that a Navi, by definition, Nevuah, means for a few moments, you're not bound by time.
So weird.
Whereas he points out that Nevi'im oftentimes talk past tense of things that are going to happen. Okay? All right, good so far?
Yep.
There's one other reason why we eat matzah. And once we've nailed that down, we can then try to make sense of everything that's going on here. Right, we've talked about the matzah we ate on the night before we left. We talked about the matzah we ate after we left, that we baked because we didn't have time to bake bread. What other...
matzah of affliction.
Spell it out. Okay. So, right, good. So look at the first source. Right, this is the Rambam's version of the Haggadah. Okay. And the Rambam's version of the Haggadah is almost like ours. I'll read you the first few lines. You tell me what's different. Starting in the second line, the Omer, this is how you begin. Bebehilu yatzanu mitzrayim, we left Mitzrayim with bewilderment. What does that mean? You heard about this thing called?
Oh, in Florida?
Yeah. Okay. A horrible, horrible tragedy. Two nights ago, a guy got into bed to go to sleep, and the earth opened up from beneath his bed and swallowed him up. I'm not making this up. In Florida, there are sinkholes. And his bedroom, in about 3 seconds, was gone. And he was buried alive.
Didn't that happen to us on another room?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yes.
Okay? So the rest of the people in the house quickly tried to save him. They saw that he was just gone.
The whole house
and they felt the house shaking. They ran out. Behilu means you have no clue what the heck is going on. Right? I promise you that these people, it was probably hours later before they realized there was a sinkhole. Like, they just, all they know is that their brother was gone. Behilu, they left Mitzrayim with no clue what was going on, why this was happening. And by the way, and that doesn't make any sense, because God told them in advance. He prepared them. Okay? So you should just know that every major event in your life will be bebehilu, even if you know it's happening. Right? When you get married, it's going to be bebehilu. Okay? Because no matter how much preparation you have, the moment you're married, it's a different reality. The moment your first child is born, right? You've had 9 months to prepare, bebehilu. You are going to be... obviously, it's a wonderful thing, but you're not going to know how to grapple with the new reality, right? It's going to take a while before you get used to it. So Am Yisrael leaves bebehilu. Is that in our Haggadah?
No.
These three lines, bebehilu, yatzanu mitzrayim, are not... these three words are not in our Haggadah, but the next phrase is, right? We hold up the matzah, we say, halachma, halachma. What does it mean? Halachma, ya? What does that mean?
This.
The bread of
affliction.
Affliction. What does that mean?
Us getting
suffering. Right. Is it bread of our suffering or the bread of our poverty? Right. One of those two. Halachmanya de'achalu afatana. They what? That our ancestors ate. When be'ara de Mitzrayim. What does that mean? Not as we left Mitzrayim, but
in
the land of Mitzrayim. What's this talking about?
When we were slaves,
When we were slaves, the diet of the slaves was primarily matzah. Why matzah?
They didn't have time for
Number one, time, right? If you are, and we know for sure there was a huge time issue, right? How do we know that there was a ration that the slaves had to produce? How do we know that?
It says.
Yeah, Torah says that the taskmasters began to beat the Jews when they couldn't keep up with their ration, right? So if you're a slave, time is a commodity. Right, you bake the fastest thing you can, and also
but that speaks about their bricks. How do we know that that speaks?
That was their job.
No, that pasuk is talking about when they built the bricks.
Yeah.
So how are we talking about buses?
I'm saying that if you have a ration, then you can't take too much time out of your day to bake things. So the fastest thing you can possibly bake is what you do. Right. And by the way, they're working in the kilns. They probably threw their dough in with the bricks. You know what I'm talking about? Like a brick kiln looks exactly like a matzah oven. It's exactly the same thing. Okay? And the other thing is ingredients, right? The cheapest possible ingredients, water and flour. One fascinating fact that archaeology has brought to our understanding of what happened in Mitzrayim. Right? I have not seen anyone else talk about this, but it's a fact. I've seen the archaeology, I have not seen anyone connected to the Torah, is that archaeologists in all of the tombs of the kings of Egypt have found, along with all the other cool stuff there, they've found 3,000 or 4,000 year old loaves of bread. Okay? Buried with the kings. And what they've done is they've done chemical analysis of the ingredients, and the ingredients were fascinating. They had butter, raisins, herbs, spices, honey, all kinds of fancy stuff. It turns out that Mitzrayim was the center of the world in bread culture. Kind of like the way France is today. Like, you know, you want to get good pastries, go to France. Right? So Egypt prided itself on being the breadbasket of the world. Prove it to me from Kumash. Quickly.
Yosef.
Yes. Yosef is put in jail with the Sar Ha'ofim. One of the most important positions in Mitzrayim was the head of the bakers. He had a big position. Right? So archaeology totally corresponds to something that sounds bizarre otherwise, right? What else? Can you prove from Sefer Shemot?
The towns of Yosef are people from all over the region would come to Egypt.
Right. So that could just be for grain. I'm talking about fancy bread. What other proof that...
The slaves could have eaten anything. Why did they choose to bake bread out of anything else that they could have eaten?
So we'll get there in 1 second. You're right. Before we get to that, what other proof...
They made a lot of bread. Like
I'll give you a clue. In the Esther Makot, there's a mention of the bread ovens.
The frogs.
Correct. The frogs are going to be found b'tanurecha. Right? Well, of all things, why does the Torah mention tanurecha? Because that was a major thing. Right? So we'll take Alex's point now. Okay? So this, now we can understand why the first thing the Jews want to do, remember there is no Isser Chametz at first Pesach, the first thing they want to do when they wake up in the morning of their freedom, is
bake bread,
not matzah. Because it's the first time in their lives they have enough time to bake bread. Okay? You can imagine, as a slave, one of the worst things about being poor is you see rich people eating their food, right? You see those homeless people in New York City sitting outside of fancy restaurants, right?
Yeah.
Right? They're eating their can of baked beans and they see like the fancy food inside. Right, so the Jews for 210 years, and they talk about it when they go into the Midbar. We see over and over, and they talk about the food they saw their masters eating. And so for 210 years, they see their masters eating fancy, rich, luxurious bread. First thing they do when they wake up in the morning, I'm going to have myself a big loaf of bread. Right? What does God do? Bam! Get out! Right? No time. Right?
That's so mean.
So it sounds very mean. We'll talk about that in a second. Okay, do you follow what's happening?
I have a question.
Okay, so they planned on eating like the Egyptians, right? God doesn't let them. Okay, they're forced out before they have a chance. They're stuck eating matzah again. Okay? So what's that about? Right? So we see three different stages. We have halach ma'an yad de'achalu av hatana ba'ar de'mitzrayim, the bread that the slaves ate for 210 years. We have the bread that God commanded them to eat as part of what? On the night before Pesach? The night before they left?
Matzah.
As part of the Korban Pesach. It was Pesach, Matzah, and Maror all rolled up together. It's probably proof, by the way, you know, Rav Kuperin describes the Ashkenazi Chumrah of baking Matzah until it's crispy. However, it's pretty clear that at the time of the base of Mikdash, the Matzah was soft. What's the proof?
It was cooked on their shoulders? I mean, if you experiment and you put a piece of bread in your shoulders as you're walking, it's automatically going to become more like a laugh.
That's
they didn't bake it while they're walking.
Right, but they put it on their shoulders and they
put the dough on their
shoulders. Yeah, that's what kept the dough. It says they baked it later. What?
In the times of the Beit HaMikdash?
Yeah. So it says, Al Matzotu Morim Yochu. You have to eat the Korban Pesach wrapped up, right?
Like a laffa.
Like a wrap. Or like a laffa, right? Words they took the Korban Pesach and the Maror, and they wrapped it in the matzah. That's likely what happened. It's much, much harder. Try eating Korban Pesach with the crispy matzah, right? It's going to fall apart. Right? That's why the only day in my house that's where the floor is filthier than after the Purim Suda, well, except for the bathroom, but everywhere else, but everywhere else in the house, the floor is filthy on the night after the Leil Seder. Why? Because you have the wine spilling, and you have all the crumbs right through the matzah. The floor is unbelievably filthy. Like, sponge is not enough. Like
so good.
What?
I like the taste of cardboard matzah, though.
I love it also. I'm just saying. Okay, anyway. Point being, we have these three...
No, I was saying, like, if the matzah is too dry or bendy, there's a chashash of
chametz. Some Ashkenazi poskim are fine with Sephardi matzah. It's a machlokas. Okay.
Hang on.
One second. We have these three stages. bread that we ate when we were slaves, the bread we ate the night before we left, and then the bread that we ate because we didn't have time to bake regular bread. Okay, three stages. Okay. What's this about? So, the bread we ate as slaves, the bread we ate the night before we left,
right,
and the bread we ate against our will after we left, instead of puffy bread.
Ah.
We didn't have time to let it rise.
Well, how's that different than the second one?
Well, the second one was the night before, and that was a separate command.
Sorry. Night before, Corporal Pesach, right. And the last one
right.
Was when we were fearing.
Right. So does anyone see any paradox here? I do. Right? In other words,
no,
we say...
The same thing when we're free.
We see... that's a paradox. We also... We say we ate matzah because we didn't have time to let the bread rise. But the Torah tells us a different reason why we eat matzah. We eat matzah as part of the Korban Pesach. You follow? Strange. Okay. I'm going to give you a mashal, which I think is going to just describe in more intense terms what this paradox is about, and then we'll try to answer it and explain what's going on. Imagine that you are unjustly accused of a very serious crime. You're convicted, you're put in jail, solitary confinement for life. Okay? You spend 15 years in prison, and every day you dream of freedom, you dream of what would happen if you could prove that you're innocent, right? And of course, in this prison, to save taxpayer dollars, they feed the prisoners 3 meals a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. They feed them oatmeal with vitamins mixed in to keep the prisoners alive. Okay, the cheapest possible food, right? Absolutely disgusting, but it does have the nutrients to keep them alive, right? So they eat this 3 meals a day, 7 days a week. So of course, when you're lying in bed, dreaming of freedom, what do you dream about? Okay, what kind of food?
Bread.
I would dream of steak or sushi.
Sushi.
Okay? So let's say, what's your favorite sushi place here?
Sushi
Rechavi. Sushi Rechavi? Okay. So you're lying there in bed for month after month, year after year. What time is it right now, by the way? Okay. And you lie there dreaming about Sushi Rechavi. Okay? Your mouth waters, right? One day, after 15 years, your prison cell door opens, the warden is standing there, and he says, I have good news, new evidence has come to light that's proven your innocence, and tomorrow morning you're a free man. Okay? You nearly flip out with excitement, and the warden says, as is customary in prisons and summer camps, your last meal is a good one. They did that much about, right?
Yeah.
More in common than you'd think.
Are you saying Moshe was a prison?
No.
Yes.
Anyway.
Aha!
So the custom is that you can choose whatever you want to eat for your last meal in prison, and we will serve it to you. So you say, sushi! They say,
sure.
You got it. So they bring you into a special room, and a prison warden comes in with a tray with one of those domes over it. He puts it in front of you. You pull off the dome.
There's
a big plate of sushi and a bowl of oatmeal. And you shove the oatmeal away and start digging into your sushi. And the warden says, I'm sorry. Prison regulations require that prisoners eat 3 meals of oatmeal every day. You can have the sushi. You have to have the oatmeal also. You're like, that's weird. Okay. So you kind of force down. You kind of know. You kind of know this is the last time I'm ever going to have to have oatmeal. I'm never going to have oatmeal in my life again. For sure, I'm never going to touch it again. So you force yourself to have that last bowl of oatmeal. Okay, you get it down. Now I can have my sushi. Great. Next morning, they give you a cheap polyester suit, $50 for the cab fare, and say, have a nice life. You get in the cab, say to the driver, driver, to Sushi Rechavia. Takes you to Sushi Rechavia. You walk in. Your mouth is slobbering. You've waited in this room for so long. You walk in. You sit at the table. The waitress comes over. She brings you a menu. You open up the menu. And the only thing on the menu is oatmeal. Na 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 na. So that's exactly what happened to Am Yisrael. You follow?
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds like a sadistic Twilight Zone plot.
Yeah.
So why is Hashem doing this?
Or is
it every year you're first eating the
Bible. Yeah. So I want to explain to you why Hashem did this in the following way.
That'd be awful.
Okay. I want to point out that we have a trio. We have a trio of symbols of the Seder, right? Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. The three things you have to talk about, you have to internalize what they're about in order to fully experience the Seder. And if you think about it, there's a problem. Because they seem to be somewhat redundant. Okay? The Korban Pesach, I understand. The Korban Pesach, what does the Korban Pesach symbolize? That's right, but what does the Korban Pesach symbolize? what is it supposed to make us feel like? What is it supposed to be? Chirut, freedom. It's the symbol of the Geulah. It's the symbol of Hashem taking us from suffering, from oppression, from slavery, to freedom and wealth, right? Even the food itself, lamb is not cheap meat, right? It's
and we eat it wrapped in the bread of affliction, in the suffering.
Ah, okay. So we have the Pesach, we have the Matzah, and the Maror. Okay. Matzah and Maror, I think, are problematic. What does Mara symbolize? Very simple. Our suffering. And what does Matzah symbolize? Halachma Anya. This is the bread of our suffering. So the Torah does not repeat. The Torah doesn't have redundant symbols. There's not going to be two mitzvot to do the same thing. So why do we need Matzah if we have Mara? And why do we need Mara if we have Matzah? It's the same thing. You follow?
Yes.
So I want to suggest that that's incorrect. That reflects a misunderstanding of what matzah is. Most people, when they say halachmanya, this is the bread of our affliction, they mean this bread symbolizes our affliction, our suffering. I want to suggest that instead, matzah represents a completely different aspect of Yetzias Mitzrayim that is very, very easy to overlook. And for that reason, Hashem forced it in our faces. Okay, what is that? So Pesach, the Korban Pesach, symbolizes the outright miracles that God did to once and for all extract us from our suffering and bring us to a state of Geulah. Easy to appreciate or hard to appreciate?
Very easy.
Very, very easy to appreciate. Okay, there's no question, Shirat Hayam, and you know, we usually think about it at the Pesach Seder, right? We think about the fireworks. We think about the fact that we finally were free of our captors, right? Everything was hunky-dory. But there's another kind of geulah that's embedded in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim that we usually overlook. And that is the geulah that's symbolized by matzah. Because perhaps we say halach ma'anya, we call matzah lechem oni. Maybe it doesn't mean the bread that symbolizes our suffering. Rather, it means the bread that we ate as we suffered. Meaning what? If you had to compare Yetzias Mitzrayim, or I'm sorry, Shibud Mitzrayim, to one other period of suffering in Jewish history, what would you compare it to? There's only one thing to compare it to. Auschwitz. Okay? It was, if you look at the Midrashim, if you look at the horrendous, horrendous suffering, there is nothing else that parallels except the Holocaust. How long was the Holocaust?
5 years.
Somewhere between 5 and 8 years. How long was Shibud Mitzrayim? 210 years. If there's one miracle that stands out amongst the rest, that is most mind-blowing, it's the fact that there was an Am Yisrael left after 210 years of Auschwitz. That's the most mind-blowing thing of all, is the fact that we were still there.
Their goal wasn't really to kill him.
They threw every Jewish male child into the river. They baked babies into the bricks of the storehouse that they built.
Oh,
right? Total starvation diets. Horrendously hard work. Beating. It was.
But what makes so, no sense about the two is if that was their meaning. If that was like the objective. But then who was going to continue doing the work? Both during the Holocaust. And
so in general, anti-Semitism usually is self-defeating. It's usually not so rational. Okay? So perhaps when we say lechem oni, matzah, we're not saying this is the bread that summons our affliction. This is the bread that kept us alive. This is the bare necessities of survival that Hashem somehow provided us with, that kept us, at least kept our heart beating while we suffered so horrendously. So that 210 years later, there would be an Am Yisrael left to be redeemed. And we can understand why that miracle is a miracle that Am Yisrael would want to turn their backs on as soon as it's over. Because it's a miracle that's painful. It's a miracle that was just about survival and not about comfort, not about joy, not about happiness. Right? So Am Yisrael, they can't wait to turn their backs on it. That chapter of miserable living is over, and now we're on to the good times.
And they can't, because they have
to. And Hashem says, if you do that,
you'll forget me.
You'll forget the most important lesson. This is a concept that has kept Am Yisrael alive for the past 3,000 years, which is that even when you were in the pits of hell, I was there with you. I was keeping you alive. Things were not good. You suffered horrendously, but I was there with you, and I was keeping you going. And if the Jews can't take that out with them, then all they have is the fair weather relationship to Hashem. When things are good, we see Hashem. But Hashem wants Am Yisrael to be ready to see Him even in the times of suffering. The matzah is the lechem oni, is the bread that we had while we're sunk in poverty. It's the fact that Hashem somehow keeps us going behind the scenes, hidden. There's no miracles there. Right? Hashem keeps us going, right? Even when things are rough. Right? And that, the ability to see that, is crucial for a spiritual person. Because there's no life that's just Yitzis Mitzrayim. There's no life that's just the good times. Right? And if a person feels like they only see Hashem when the fireworks are shooting off, when Hashem is saving them, then they're losing a huge amount of their connection to Hashem. Because the power of a connection to Hashem is that when things are horrible, we know Hashem is with us then also. That's the matzah. And we tried to run from it, and Hashem made sure that it came back to us. Right? This explains one fascinating halacha. This is something I mentioned in Shir before, that Bizman HaZeh, Pesach Matzah Mar, which one is a mitzvah d'oraita Bizman HaZeh?
Maror.
Matzah. Maror is a mitzvah d'rabbanan Bizman HaZeh. Chazal say, Maror is only a mitzvah when it's paired up with the Korban Pesach. You know the Korban Pesach? Maror is not relevant either. Why? Because there's no independent value in thinking about how horrible things were. The only value thinking about how horrible things were is when it leads to how good things are now, the Korban Pesach. You don't have that continuum, so then it's not valuable. However, matzah, even when you're not in a state of geula, we don't have the base of Mikdash, right? For most of Jewish history, when people ate matzah, things were horrible, right? The Spanish Inquisition, people are like hiding in a cellar, eating matzah, you know, by, in the dark so that no one can see them. Right? These are horrible. But that's when matzah is most important, is for the Jews to internalize that no matter how good or how bad things are, Hashem has our backs. Hashem's with us. Hashem's keeping us alive. We have lechem oni, right? That's the symbol of the matzah. So even though it's totally natural for us to want to run and forget about those times, Hashem wants to make sure we take them with us. Right? That's why even as we're free, He wants us to eat the lechem oni with the Korban Pesach, wants to eat the lechem oni once we're free, to make sure that we never lose that spiritual insight. That Hashem is with us in our suffering. Shabbat.